Good evening, and welcome to this special live broadcast of the Baseball Forum, co-sponsored by WWAY and WHQR 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn, WHQR's news director and tonight's moderator. The city of Wilmington is asking voters to approve a $37 million general obligation bond that will pay for the site and the construction of a baseball stadium to host an Atlanta Braves-affiliated minor league team. If the bond is approved, the city will use a property tax increase of 2.5 cents per $100 evaluation to pay for the bond. One local economist estimates the average property owner in Wilmington would pay between $40 and $60 per year for the stadium. There's a great deal of passion on both sides of the issue. There are also a lot of questions, assumptions, fears, and misinformation, which is the reason for tonight's forum. We hope to shed some light on the issue for you tonight, for you, the voters. So let's meet our panelists. On the pro side, City of Wilmington Mayor Bill Sappho is an enthusiastic proponent of the ballpark. Mayor Sappho is joined tonight by City Councilman Kevin O'Grady, who served as the primary negotiator on the deal, the Memorandum of Understanding, agreed upon by Mandalay, the Braves, and the City of Wilmington. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Let's meet the other side. Now known as the Vote No Stadium Tax Referendum Committee, the opposition group is spearheaded by Scott Harry. Jim Rafferty, seated next to Mr. Harry, is also a member of the group. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
On our journalist panel tonight, WWAY's political editor, Kevin Wizzardo. Hello, Kevin.
Thank you, Rachel.
Nice to have you here. And WHQR reporter, Sarah Wood. Hi, Sarah. For those of you watching or listening at home, we're joined in the WHQR MC Ernie Gallery by a live studio audience. Tonight's format will be less rigid than previous political forums that we've held this season. Again, the purpose of this forum is simple: to facilitate a thorough, direct, and transparent discussion of the issue so that stakeholders can make the most informed decision possible at the polls. We recognize that both sides feel they have a lot at stake. Tonight's discussion will be broken into segments in order to create a conversation that's freer but still has some structure. We'll address different facets of the project in these organized segments during the first half, in which our two journalists will be asking the questions and following up when appropriate. Answers will be timed in order to keep the parameters fair. However, we won't have an absolute cutoff. We'll permit the two sides to address one another with respect and courtesy. In part two of tonight's forum, we'll introduce participation from you, our audience. We have questions previously emailed to us by viewers and listeners. Members of our studio audience may also ask questions of the panelists, and we'll use tweeted questions. Those of you at home who would like to tweet a question, please use hashtag WHQRForums with an S. In past forums, we've gotten some very worthwhile tweets near the end of the evening, and we haven't been able to use them. So if you're planning to tweet a question, please go ahead and do that now. And now, let's begin. In lieu of opening statements, we opted for a general open-ended question. WWAY's Kevin Wizzardo will begin. We'll give the city the opportunity to answer first.
Thank you, Rachel. Mr. Mayor, Councilman O'Grady, in the first presentation Mandalay made, Mandalay's Rich Newman said the days of cities issuing general obligation bonds for ballparks are over. Should the city fund construction of a baseball stadium using general obligation bond money, why or why not?
Well, very simple, Kevin. It's the cheapest way to borrow money for a city because you're giving the security of all of the income of the city to the bondholders. So you get the lowest interest rate on a general obligation bond. I appreciate Rich making that statement, but in this state, it is still the best way to finance a long-term capital project, and that's why we chose that mechanism. Now, it does mean that we had to go to a vote of the populace, and we were happy to do that. So there is that downside to it, but that's why we're going through this process.
And I would also just
Chairman, just to let you know that 80% of the deals that we have seen around the country have been done with general obligation bonds or public-private partnerships, as opposed to 100% financed by some private entity or private group. So most of these deals have been done.
Kevin, I interpreted your question as why we chose that kind of bond rather than why we're financing it in the abstract. So I hope I answered your question. But if the city's going to finance, the cheapest way, the least expensive borrowing method is general obligation bond.
And the Vote No Stadium Tax referendum, you will also have an opportunity to answer that question.
Not being a politician, not being a city official, really can't speak to that. General obligation bond seems to put the, being backed up with the property tax that they're proposing, seems to put the weight on the shoulders of the property owners in Wilmington. That seems kind of a small group to put that burden on. To me, it would it's an unbearable burden, given that we've already had property rate increases this year, and this would be another. I think we've estimated 6% increase on the property tax. So, you know, the city. I'm glad the city's using their cheapest method, but putting it on the burden of the property owners is inappropriate.
Actually, I think the cheapest way to have done this was private enterprise, with private numbers and private investors coming forward to put their own capital into it. As an independent businessman, I'm very uncomfortable being on a negative side of something. Vote no. I've spent most of my career on the other side trying to convince people to do things corporately. And one of the things that bothers me the most about this is that I don't see the selling. I don't hear the selling. I don't see the selling. And I haven't seen private investors step up. And contrary to what the mayor may have said, most of the examples that were in the NSS survey, and they were numerous, it was very exhaustive, it is not 80% at all. In some cases, it was high as 70-30. In some cases, it was 17-83. In some cases, it was 100%. I think the important part is why private investors are not stepping up to this if there's money to be made, and permit the city to do what the city does very, very well, and that's to gain property taxes from corporations and companies that move here. Okay. So I can't really answer the question exactly as you phrased it.
Thank you, and we'll get more deeply into that topic as well as the evening goes along. Let's start with our first segment, the implications for taxpayers and financing options for the stadium. Sarah, would you deliver your first question to Scott, Harry, and Jim Rafferty?
Mr. Harry, Mr. Rafferty, what does $37 million mean for the taxpayers?
Well, I'm the guy that says $75 million. And Mr. O'Grady took exception to that, but I think we've come to the conclusion that it's fairly accurate. That's the gross number that the taxpayers will be asked to pay. That's assuming that the city gets $1.5 million per penny of tax increase. They're proposing a 2.5 cent tax increase at the moment. It was a 3.5, but they cut it down a little. But if you do 2.5 times $1.5 million, that's $3.75 million a year. And over the 20-year life, assuming property values don't rise a penny over the next 20 years, that's $75 million. That's a lot of money and a heavy burden to put on our community at any time, but especially during an economy that like we have now. We simply can't afford to do that. As Jim mentioned, there are a lot of deals out there that have public-private involvement. Mr. Newman pointed out earlier that we do have public-private involvement. Mandalay is going to pay $500,000 a year, $10 million over 20 years toward this deal. But remember, there's still $75 million coming out of our pockets over the next 20 years. Now, if they pay off the bond early, I assume the tax will go away early. And I hope that would be the case. Don't know many taxes that have gone away then.
Okay, thank you. Let's give the city the opportunity to answer the same question.
Well, it's numbers. He looks at me. So.
he negotiated the deal, and he's good at it. Thank you.
Mr. Harry doesn't understand the financing. First of all, in this state, when you do municipal financing, it's not like a mortgage where you have the constant payment and a decreasing principal. In this state, the principal balance stays the same throughout the course of the loan. The interest rate drops, and as a result, your payments get smaller with time. And that's one of his principal errors in his calculation. The second error in his calculation is he forgot to subtract the $10 million that baseball is going to pay us to go towards the bond. So the actual debt service on this throughout the entire 20 years is $54 million, $10 million of which will be paid by baseball. So it's $44 million to the taxpayers. 2.5 cents is needed in order to fund the early years of the financing. You always have to announce the amount you need at the beginning, and that's 2.5 cents. That's going to fund three things. It's going to buy the land, and it's going to build a stadium. It's then going to fund a debt service fund so we keep our good credit rating. The local government commission will require us to deposit in an account here 75% of the next year's debt service so that we can maintain our rating. The bond credit rating agencies will also be looking for that. We will fund that with the 2.5 cents. And then we will fund the capital improvement fund. And that will be funded between the fourth and the eighth year and will give us a sufficient fund to keep this stadium modern throughout the 20-year period, which we want because we want to be proud of our stadium. After that, about the ninth year, the city will no longer need 2.5 cents to fund this stadium. It will begin to decline over time. So you say, well, what happens to the difference? Same thing happens to all of our budgeting. Some future city council, 9 or 10 years from now, will sit down and look at all the expenses of the city, including its debt service, which on the stadium is now getting smaller. We'll see all the money they have coming in, and they'll determine then what the appropriate tax rate will be. Now, 9 or 10 years from now, I don't know what gas prices are going to be or how much it's going to cost to hire a fireman. It'll probably be more expensive. So I can't promise you that your tax rate will go down. But the money beyond the 2.5 cents that is no longer needed for the stadium will be available for other city purposes or to reduce the tax rate, whatever is appropriate out there in the future. So your numbers are wrong, Scott. I saw it on TV, and you know, if you'd called, I would have been happy to explain it to you.
May I respond?
What you did is you used a straight line. And if you use a straight line, you come up with the wrong number.
May I respond?
Thank you. Yes, please.
The 2.5 cents is completely independent of the bond. We know that $37 million financed over 20 years at 4% is $2.722 million a year. That's a whole other calculation. 2.5 cents is simply the amount of tax you're raising on us, correct? 2.5 cents per $100 of property, that's what you're raising on us. That at $1.5 million per year, which is the city's number, 1.2 to 1.5 is what you estimate the revenue, is $3.75 million a year. It's not?
No.
2.5 times 1.5 isn't 3.75?
I'll explain it again. The first year, the debt service will be $3.3 million. The 20th year,
I'm talking about
the debt service will be $1.9 million. So you don't need 2.5 cents throughout the entire length of the debt.
That's great.
It reduces, so you have overstated the debt.
Great, but this is the first time you've said that that tax will drop. All we've ever heard to this point was it was going to be 3.5, now it's going to be 2.5, but we've never heard that there'll be a change in that tax over the life of the loan.
I have to respond to that. We've never said 3.5. I don't know where he got that one from. And Scott, if you didn't understand the financing, my phone number is available. You could have picked up the phone and called me. I would have been happy to explain this to you.
Okay. Now, I think we're getting into territory that isn't productive. So let's continue. If you're just joining us, you're tuned to a special live broadcast of the Baseball Forum on WWAY's secondary channel, RTV, and WHQR 91.3 FM. And if we could have our studio audience quiet, please. Thank you. There will be a time for audience participation, and we'll look forward to that. Now, we are talking about the implications for taxpayers and financing options for the stadium. Kevin Rosardo, would you deliver your next question to city officials?
The scientific polling we've done shows that few people dispute that they would enjoy a ballpark. So what are the concrete, tangible risks and benefits for the taxpayers if this deal were approved?
Well, from the benefit side, there's an economic development side of it. I mean, what we've been able to see in Greenville, South Carolina, what we've seen in Durham, North Carolina, what we have seen in Dayton, Ohio, what we've seen in Charleston, South Carolina, and the economic impacts that it has had. I personally know a little bit about Durham because my father was part owner in a Ramada Inn that's adjacent to the ballpark, and that area you would never have gone into years ago. Once that ballpark was put into place, it has been unbelievable what it's done for downtown Durham. It's got one of the highest occupancy rates in the entire triangle. $1 billion worth of private investment has gone in down there. It has been a good thing. In Greenville, South Carolina, 48 new businesses opened up within a quarter mile of that new stadium there. 110 businesses opened up within a half a mile, and 31% increase in property values around that particular stadium. In Dayton, Ohio, $55 million brand new facility, office building that's been built down there, 900 additional housing units been down there, built around there. So we've seen the economic impacts. And interesting enough, I've had an opportunity also to talk with other mayors around the state of North Carolina, in particular former Mayor Pat McCrory of Charlotte, that I've been able to serve on the Metro Coalition of Mayors that's running for the governor of this great state, pretty conservative guy. Asked him, why would you invest in the Bobcat Arena and the, you know, the NASCAR Museum and invest some public money around Panther Stadium? He said, because it's good for economic development. It's brought a lot of people to our community. Look what's happened to Charlotte. It's an economic powerhouse. And it's true. I've also talked to the mayor, Bill Bell, in Durham, Mayor Joins in Winston-Salem. They all are touting their stadiums. It's a community asset. The community loves it. And I think it's a great thing for the community. I think it would be a great asset for this community, a community asset that I think would be live on for generations to come, just like Thalian Hall, along our river. And tied in with the historic Riverwalk, with the public parking already in place, I think it's a phenomenal opportunity for our community. It only comes once in a lifetime, and once it's gone, it's gone. And I think it would be a good thing.
Okay. Can I add? I think Kevin also asked for the risks, and let's talk about them because we've said there are some risks. One thing I think people are afraid of is operational loss. What if they can't sell enough tickets? We've eliminated that from the city because our contract clearly provides that all operational expenses fall on baseball, and they are responsible for all operational losses. We are not going to pay those losses, so we've taken that risk off the table contractually. The other risk that's out there, the other risk which is out there, and I know it from Vero Beach when their team moved away and left them stranded there with an empty stadium. That's a big thing that we were concerned with from the beginning, which is why we have negotiated a unique contract here. We have the Atlanta National Baseball League Club signing. The Atlanta Braves are going to sign this minor league lease. That doesn't happen. And they have agreed. They have contracted with us that they will place a team here for 20 years. That's a promise we can count on and we can enforce. The second thing we have is a financial backing from them. In the event the operator should fail, they will financially back the lease for 2 years and operate the team while we find a new operator. Those are unique provisions in our contract that you don't find anywhere else. And near to ameliorate those potential risks, we've been very aware of them, and we have negotiated very hard to get those provisions in there.
Okay, thank you. Let's give the vote no tax. Mr. Harry, Mr. Rafferty.
First of all, let me clear up something. I was under the impression, and I'd like you to repeat this again, Mr. O'Grady, please, that when a bond referendum is issued, that, I know, I'm sorry about that. I apologize, George. when a bond referendum is issued and the money is expended, the bond referendum has very specific wording in it. That's exactly like a contract and exactly like an MOU should. And it, I think the statute is 154 or 157.
157.25.1.
Indicates that monies earmarked for a specific project cannot be used until that project is completely completed. So I believe you said if there's money left over, that it could be used for something else. And I don't believe that's correct.
No, I'm not talking about the bond, the money that's received from the bond. That has to be spent on the stadium and will entirely be spent on the stadium, and that's what that statute speaks about. The only obligation we have on the tax rate is we have to announce the initial tax rate that we will have to charge in order to fund the funds. We've done that. But we do not have to maintain that tax rate throughout the length of the bond. And in fact, the way bond financing works, as you start to pay down the bond, and we pay them down very rapidly
right.
because of the level principle, less money is needed from the taxpayers to meet that obligation. But the money we raise from the bond, the $37 million, yes, every penny of that has to be spent on the stadium and will be. $6 million for land, $31 million for the construction of the stadium. We own the stadium. The city of Wilmington will own it. It will not belong to baseball. Baseball does not get a penny from us. That's another thing we've heard from the NOS is somehow we're giving money to baseball. They don't get anything from us. In fact, quite the contrary. They have to pay us $10 million, $500,000 a year for 20 years.
One second. You mentioned that application for the bond. Is that the application to the local government commission?
No, we haven't made that yet. We won't make that until you all approve it.
I have a document from the city of Wilmington to the LGC that states 3.5 cents tax rate that was submitted to the LGC.
Wouldn't be 3.5, it would be 2.
Well, that's what's on it.
Well, the only thing we submitted so far is what was necessary to put this on the ballot.
Okay.
Well, two other things. Are there any side letters that we should know about?
No.
We'll get to that aspect of it. Let's move on to a different segment of the conversation. Let's talk about economic growth, because that is such a big issue on both sides of the argument. And I think, Sarah, you have the next question, and would you deliver that to Scott Harry and Jim Rafferty, please? Yeah.
What are the potentialities, negative and positive, for economic development?
Well, let's define economic development as the ability of an entity, government or otherwise, to increase its wealth, not just move money around, but rather to increase the wealth. So if we use that as a definition, about 85% of the economists in the United States, including one that was negative at one time and then turned around later when his peers directed his model, including several mayors that I personally spoke to, one of whom was actually in this building last year, said that the economic development in cities in which there is not a blight, notice the word blight, in which there is not a blight in the downtown or the surrounding area, the dog don't hunt. It just doesn't bring jobs. It does not bring additional funding. It does not bring anything to the city. As a matter of fact, in two of the examples the mayor used, in the evenings when the baseball stadium is open, the local businesses close, the bars and restaurants, because baseball at the end of the day, I'm as passionate about it, grew up with it, played it as anybody in this room, maybe not as knowledgeable as some, but passionate about it. At the end of the day, it's a business, and that business, and I compliment Mandalay and the Braves for moving this process ahead as much as they have been able to do, but it's a business, and it's a business decision, and this is a bad business decision. There's no statistical proof that a stadium that is supposed to be an anchor as opposed to being a part of a refurbished, blighted environment in which the taxpayers are not funding the stadium, but rather private enterprises have worked the entire gamut, ever brings in real dollars. And this stadium, I believe, let's use the numbers that we were given, let's say the payoff is $49 million, there's roughly 100 jobs. So we're going to pay $490,000 a job. And I'm not suggesting that those are good jobs. As a matter of fact, I'm suggesting they're not good jobs, and some of those are seasonal jobs. So this is just not a good business deal.
Thank you.
Mr. Great.
I understand the economic reports he's talking about, but the funny part is all these negative economic studies, and yet I bet many of us in here can cite examples of very successful stadiums that have improved cities. You look at Jacobs Field in Cleveland. It just excited the downtown and made it a very successful downtown. Dayton, owned by Mandalay, Oklahoma City as well, very successful. In our own state, Durham, Greensboro, we see these positive examples, and yet the economic studies tell us they can't possibly succeed. The problem is they're all based on an old model. Beta and Dye did a study of the stadiums between 1958 and 1987, and they found no positive correlation with income growth, which that's economic development, make our incomes grow. And those studies were repeated by others using the same models, looking at Major League Baseball, National Hockey League stadiums, National Football League stadiums, the professional leagues, the top leagues, and they don't find any economic basis for it. But they fail to explain the ones that are successful. And even in Beta and Dye, going back to the genesis of that line of economic studies, they found that in Indianapolis, the stadium there had a positive economic effect, but they never tried to explain it. Well, subsequent studies have looked more deeply into what makes a successful stadium. Journal of Urban Affairs in 2008, the Santos study, looked at the same stadiums of the earliest studies, but also looked at more modern stadiums and looked for the indicia of success, and they found two. One, build it in a downtown. That's what we're going to do. Second, and you don't have to have both of them, either one. Second, bring a new team to the town. It'll be positive economic growth. Well, we've got both of those. But we've got another one. A year ago, in the Journal of Sports Economics, October 2011, a professor from San Francisco takes the same economic model that had been used for decades with Major League Baseball and says, let me study minor league baseball now, and assumed she was going to get the same negative results. To her surprise, across the board in minor leagues, AAA down to rookie, including independents, every minor league level has positive economic results. And not only that, some of them were significantly more. One of the significant ones was A Advanced, exactly the kind of team we're going to get. So we're going downtown, we're going to bring a new team, and it's going to be minor league. We've got the three things that economists agree result in positive income growth.
And I'd also like to also throw into that that the city of Charlotte just approved a $77 million brand new downtown minor league stadium, the economic powerhouse of the state of North Carolina. Just think that's interesting. And when we look around the state and we talk to the mayors around the state, they're very high on these things, and they feel that they're tremendous economic generators for economic development around them. And I've seen them personally.
And there's one more area, which we haven't, and none of those earlier studies looked at. They all looked at economic income growth. Not one of them looked at property value. What is the impact of a stadium on property value? Study done, North American Associate of Sports Economists, August 2008, looked at the impact in one city, in Ohio, on what the impact of the stadiums were. And this is what they found. One, bring in a new facility, integrate it into an area of redevelopment, which is what we're going to do here, located in the heart of the city, which is what we're going to do here, and you might expect to generate increases in residential property values in the vicinity of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay, Councilman O'Grady, if you'd wrap up your thought, please.
They found a direct connection between stadiums and economic value. So there's a lot of positive economic
Thank you.
Result.
Thank you very much. Sarah, did you have a follow-up question?
I do. There have been models discussed in terms of other cities, and for both sides, I want to know how does the size of Wilmington compare to the success of the sizes of some of these cities like Cleveland, Durham, Dayton?
You're asking me? Okay, I didn't want to jump ahead. Well, of course, if you're talking about Cleveland, you're talking about Major League. So you really need to look in the minor leagues. And we'll be below the middle in terms of size, but certainly of sufficient size to have a successful experience here. And remember, we have insulated the taxpayer from operation. Baseball believes in Wilmington. Baseball believes they'll be successful, and we have therefore let them take the risk. They get the benefit, but they also take the risk.
Okay.
Because they have to pay us $500,000 regardless of how well they do.
Thank you, Councilman O'Grady. Let's give the other side an opportunity to respond to that question and the follow-up question as
Thank
well.
Thank you. Councilman O'Grady said, build it in a downtown, and he's right. But as Jim mentioned, it needs to be a blighted downtown. They'll refer to the north end of the town as a stagnant area, and it is that, but it's cleared and ready for development. The baseball stadiums work when there is a significant bad element that needs to be removed and started over. Many of these cities that they've mentioned start out with real economic development. They give entrepreneurs the chance to come in and invest and build. In Durham, nearly $1 billion was spent before the team became majorly successful. It was the RTP, the Research Triangle Park, that drug in the people, and the growth that was downtown Durham happened before the stadium. He mentioned Santos as a study, and I read about Santos. His 2008 study was destroyed by his peers. 95% of the American Association of Economists agree with this statement. No significant effect was found for the introduction of double A, single A, low A, rookie league, or independent leagues or teams. If there's a measurable effect of bringing a team to town, it is negative. It takes jobs away from our community. It takes jobs away from our local restaurants and our local entertainment businesses. All the economic activity that is going to happen if the stadium is brought to town is going to happen inside those walls. It's going to enrich the team and the players. It's not going to help Wilmington.
Good answer.
Thank you.
Just one quickie. Where is that? The Journal of Sports Economics. Alex Remington, May 2012, not 2008, 2012, just a few months ago.
I've got handouts for the journalist listing 40, 50 studies.
More jobs, economic development, sounds great. It's just not true.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, you're tuned to a special live broadcast of WHQR and WWAY's Baseball Forum. We're live on WWAY's secondary RTV channel tonight and also WHQR 91.3. Kevin Wizzardo, let's move on to a new topic. I think we've covered economic development pretty thoroughly. Mm-hmm. The Memorandum of Understanding, there are a lot of questions around that. Would you deliver your first question to the city?
Well, one question I think a lot of people have is the Memorandum of Understanding is not a final agreement, so there's a lot of specifics not yet outlined. Why should voters vote when they don't have all the information? What information should they have, should they know about before they cast their vote?
Well, we think everything that you need is in here, because what we've established is the general parameters of the business deal and the cost of the deal and who bears which responsibility. Now, there'll certainly be a lease. Actually, there'll be a lease for the exclusive space baseball uses, and there'll be a management agreement. But the outline of the principles are in here, and from this, that can be negotiated. But we've been very cognizant of not spending money before we needed to. Until we get an okay from the taxpayers to go ahead, there's nothing else to negotiate. I mean, if the vote is no, we're not going to negotiate a lease, which will take some time to go through. And we're not going to hire an architect, and we're not going to design a stadium yet. We're not going to do those things until the citizens say, yes, we're on board, we want to do this. And then we will be negotiating all of those things. But everything that you need to know for the structure of the deal has already been agreed upon. And the good news is, as we've already cited, is that we've protected the taxpayers from the major risks, and we've guaranteed a flow of money from baseball to the city that we can count on to meet the debt.
Thank you. Scott Harry or Jim Rafferty?
Could you repeat that?
Some people say that the specifics are not there because the deal has not been finalized, the bond has not been approved yet. Should voters be voting on something without all the details, and what information do they still need to know?
Well, the simple answer is you don't vote on it until you know the answer. Mayor Grady, Councilman O'Grady mentioned a lease for the office and that sort of thing. I know that in long-term leases, typically property taxes are required of the tenant. Is that going to be the case with the office space? I don't know. We've taken this valuable piece of property off the tax rolls. That causes me concern. In earlier deals, they were paying property taxes. This deal, they're not. There's so many documents involved so many emails, so many telephone calls, so many hours of discussion, changes of form, that it really gets confusing. Councilman O'Grady said there was no side agreement, but we have copies of side agreements. I don't know if they're included or not. How do we know? And the bottom line is, Kevin, exactly what you said. The MOU is a memo. It's not a contract. This is the general understanding of how we're going to do things. It's not a definitive agreement. We don't have that. Yeah, it would have been kind of nice to have a signed contract of some sort prior to voting on it, because we don't know the details in the deal. Jim?
I do have a question, in several, but one of them is, did we sign this MOU?
Yes, we've approved it.
No, I asked you if you signed it. Did you sign it?
Has
it
landed?
This is off the website.
Yeah, we approved it.
But Mandalay, ANLB's.
We approved it in open session in City Council, and I think you were there, Mr. Rafferty.
I was. ANLBC, MBP, LLC, is a limited liability corporation.
Correct.
Started in June 15th of 2012, and I believe LLC'd in the state of Delaware. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic Brave is an incorporation. Mm-hmm. So the LLC and the INC requirements are a bit different. If this document has not been signed, I would argue, although I'm not an attorney and I would defer to you on this, that this shouldn't have gone out to the voters. Very clearly in here, a memo of understanding that isn't signed by the Atlanta Braves, if they are the ANLBC, INC, and Mandalay and the city, kind of flies in the face of what is already in this agreement. There should have been the signatures, and I believe those signatures should have been presented before it went out. Secondly,
this is the agreement between the parties.
Well, Mandalay hasn't signed it. Braves haven't signed it.
I think they have, but I don't know that. I haven't seen the signed copy. But this is what's been approved, and this is the agreement.
I have no doubt.
Didn't
I have
you
no,
signed it, sir?
But believe me, I have no I doubt that the mayor is correct, that it was approved.
It was an open session, Mr. Rafferty. It was in public. You can go back session? And look at the
no,
meeting.
No, I just said.
I'm sure you do.
Mr. Mayor, I just said
I
very
agree.
Clearly.
Now we're getting into a back and forth.
But I agree.
Isn't
I agree
getting
with
us
the
anywhere.
Semantics of it, but it was an open session. It was transparent. You were there. You were there too, Scott.
Oh, I know you.
You know that we voted on it.
Absolutely.
It was. We took our vote. You know how the vote went. Okay.
Yes, okay. Sir. Thank you. Now I want to follow up on something. On something.
Excuse me. It has been signed. The mayor just said it has been signed.
I believe it has been signed
by the Braves in Mandalay. Mr. Newman.
I see
in
them
the
nodding their heads back that they've signed.
Mr. Rafferty, I'm sure you'll check on it and you'll let us know.
No, I that box.
It has been signed. It has been approved.
Actually, that box behind you, Mayor, is what I've checked on.
Mr. Rafferty and Mr. Harry, you've now at least twice alluded to documents not included in the agreement. What are you talking about?
Yeah, please tell us.
There was a. It was interesting. Mr. O'Grady, I think you mentioned, Scott did, the number of documents. This is the first time I've seen three different documents, MOUs, without some type of version control or references on the documents. And I was provided with a letter, and I think it was, I tongue-in-cheek this, Mr. Friedman of Mandalay Properties said to whomever he said it to, I don't think that's relevant, could you mind sending me a copy that I can compare all these things to, that we can compare these versions to? And then there was a document attached to that email, and it was a side letter. And the side letter was dated July 30th, 2012, and it specified a little bit different information. So my question is, but it was answered, there are no side letters.
There are no side
and
letters.
And this information from Atlanta Braves, Mr. Platt, indicating that they are only that the Atlanta Braves are only responsible for very certain things, one of which is not to pick up the financial responsibilities should Mandalay leave. My presumption is that's been negotiated out of the agreement.
You're exactly right. Okay. That was a negotiating position that was taken.
Okay.
And we fought that out because that was a break point for us.
Okay.
If they did not accept both a legal obligation to keep the team here and some financial backing, we were walking away from them. And we got that from them.
Okay.
So, yes, you've seen the documents that were never accepted. The document you had in front of us, this MOU, This is the agreement.
So why is there no term on this?
Why is no what?
Term.
I'm sorry, sir, but you have to read this because there is a term in here. And I've noticed that there's been
Please
a couple of
Please don't be sorry.
Times.
There is no term.
Well, okay. Let's go look for it. Yeah, let's look at the top of page it's six on my copy. It's paragraph 4F. And remember the way lawyers do things is when they want to define a term, they put it in parentheses and quotes, and they use a capital. So you see paragraph F at the top there? The term of the management agreement and the term of the office lease of the office space would both begin on an agreed effective date and continued uninterrupted for 20 years thereafter, paren the, quote, term. So that's a defined, let me finish, because you noted that you're not a lawyer. That is a defined term in this contract. Wherever you see the word term with a capital T, it means 20 years. So later on, when the Atlanta National League Baseball Club makes commitments, they make commitments during the term with the capital T. They're making 20-year commitments to us.
So this one paragraph, subsection F, is supposed to represent a term of 20 years in which attorneys capitalize the word term with a capital T and specify thereby that this is for 20 years. And you all are very happy with that.
They didn't agree to that section, did they?
No.
7 and 20, I think they signed.
This is the agreement. They've
actually
agreed to a term of 20 years.
Okay, we're back to the back and forth now.
No.
This is an important point.
Please go to section 7. Please go to section 7 and read the preamble.
Yeah, during the term.
No. Preamble.
That is the preamble, sir.
The city operator and ANLBC, ANLBC, MVP, LLC, the operator, and solely for purposes of Section 7 below, the Atlanta National League Baseball Club Incorporated. Section 7 only.
Yes.
There is no term in Section 7.
They're not agreeing to anything except Section 7.
Let's move on. I'm not sure that we're enlightening the viewers or listeners at this point.
Wait a minute. It is in the agreement, and we need to make certain to specify that because Mr. Rafferty is basically saying that it's not in the agreement and it is in this agreement.
The first three words.
I'm saying it's not.
During the term.
We'll be glad to show it to
you
again.
We're not gaining any ground here. We're not shedding any light on this. Let's move on.
I'm sorry.
If you're just joining us.
It's in the agreement.
You're tuned to a special live broadcast of WHQR's and WWAY's Baseball Forum. Tonight's discussion, is a publicly funded baseball stadium a good idea for the city of Wilmington? We're joined tonight by Mayor Bill Saffo, City Councilman Kevin O'Grady, and two members of the Vote No Stadium Tax Referendum Committee, Scott Harry and Jim Rafferty. Let's move now to the audience portion of this forum. The first question then will be from
Ann Russell.
Thank you, Ann. Please state your question.
My question is to Mayor Saffo and Kevin O'Grady, if he wishes. I gave you a copy of the city charter, which spells out the role of the mayor and the council on behalf of the citizens who elected them. Will you please tell me where in those paragraphs it states that other than attending to necessary infrastructure, it is the role of the elected council to negotiate with private entities for private profits to be paid for by the taxpayers? Please tell me where that is stated in the document right in front of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ann, thank you for the question. It's actually right in your first paragraph. The city council shall direct the exercise of all of the powers of the city. One of the powers the city has is to enter into economic development agreements. We've done it for centuries here. The Thalian Hall is an economic development. It's paid for by the city. It's used by private enterprise. Many of our public facilities are used by private enterprise. It is perfectly within the power of the city to do that. And the very first paragraph gives the city council the power to do that.
May I please ask you to
please state the powers? I didn't find those in the city charter.
Well, you won't find it here.
Specify the powers.
I just said that. It shall direct the exercise of all of the powers of the city. The powers of the city are defined by North Carolina statutes, and it provides that we can conduct economic development activities. So it's there.
Thank you. Cleve, do we have another questioner? Please state your name and ask your question.
Yes, I'm Tab Ballas. My wife and I enjoy walking our dogs down the Riverwalk in the afternoon, watching the sunset. It's lovely. We see families, children, you know, babies in strollers, people walking their dogs. It's enhanced the downtown greatly. My wife and I are downtown residents and business people. So the question for all of the panelists are, if the city had put the Riverwalk up to a vote, would it have been built?
Absolutely. The river is a huge asset, just like the beach.
Absolutely.
That's a very good observation.
I don't know.
I really don't know. And there's a lot of things that we have built as a city, and we don't know if they would have been passed if you'd have put them up for referendum. I don't know if Thaline Hall would have been built. I don't know if the historic USO would have been restored. I don't know if Greenfield Lake Amphitheater would have been restored. I don't know if the Cross City Trail would be built. I don't know if Legion Stadium would have even been built. So there's a lot of things in here that elected leaders made decisions on as many years ago to add to the quality of life of our community, including Brogdon Hall, including Greenfield Lake, the park there, and a lot of other things that make this community what it is today. Because those elected leaders decided to invest in our community, and I guarantee you would probably be criticized for any of those decisions today by some folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Who is our next questioner?
Hi, I'm Mark Smith. My question is for Mayor Sappho and Mr. O'Grady. Other minor league teams have done significant community outreach into their communities and especially into the inner cities. What kind of community outreach opportunities might be available if we were to get this ballpark built?
Well, first of all, the Braves are very community-oriented as well as Mandalay. And talking to those folks and watching what other teams that they have in other parts of the country and talking to those mayors and those elected officials, they are very engaged in the community, in a lot of community efforts, in nonprofit organizations, in going to schools, in working with the Little League baseball teams and allowing those Little League baseball teams to come in and play ball with the minor league players and to get developmental leagues going. It is a tremendous public outreach, and they do a tremendous job, and I've been very impressed with what I've seen with the Atlanta Braves as well as Mandalay.
I'd like to say that if you look at companies like Whole Foods that just came to town, they make a tremendous impact on our community. Their commitment to local farming and agriculture is incredible. They employ more than 100 people. They do about $30 million in sales per year, and that goes directly to the tax base. They pay property tax on the facility that they built with private funds. And then you look at a town like Charlotte with their new stadium, that $77 million, the mayor said. But 70% of that's private funds. The city of Charlotte's putting in $8 million, and the county of Mecklenburg is putting in $20 million worth of land. The rest is private. And it's private enterprise that built the city. It's private enterprise that will sustain this city. And subsidizing a leisure activity doesn't seem to me a very efficient use of government funds.
Thank you. Who is our next questioner?
Tom Looney. My question is for Mayor Sappho and Mr. O'Grady. The question was, if follow-up in a sense to your comment, Mayor, about the amphitheater music venue outside there, which the taxpayers just helped renovate and improve, was a convention center intended to be a multi-use, i.e. concert venue? If no, why not? And if yes, why would we build yet another taxpayer-funded concert venue right next to it, and in addition to the amphitheater?
Tom, thank you for that question. And the convention center was not built to be a concert center. It was built to be a center where people would come in, conventions, meetings, a lot of statewide organizations that come here. We've had 113 events at the convention center. We've had over 53,000 hours of labor that have been generated there, 66,000 people that have come to our downtown. It has done what it's supposed to do, is to bring organizations and people to our community. We've had the FedCom people, the federal folks that take a look at defense contracts. We've had the North Carolina Human Resources Organization here, the North Carolina Planning Organization here, the Triathlon Ironman competition that rented the entire facility, and this is just for this particular month. Each one of those organizations, those last three, had a minimum of 500 people that attended. Most of those people stayed in hotels here, ate downtown, ate all over the community, and really enjoyed our community. This venue, this multi-use facility that we're talking about today, could be used for outdoor concerts. At the Greenfield Lake Amphitheater, which, by the way, is a very popular amphitheater, we have a limitation of about 800 people there. You can bring, obviously, larger concert venues here to this community with this facility here on the river.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Harry or Mr. Rafferty, do you have a follow-up?
I do. The concert question keeps coming up, and Dayton keeps coming up as the big example of a great stadium. This year they've had Superstars, sort of a low-rent Sesame Street. They've had Bird Zerk, which is a cartoon character event. They've also had the K-9 Trick Dog Show. I'm sorry. That's the extent of the outdoor events that have come to Dayton, because they have other facilities that are properly designed for concerts, like Brooklyn Arts Center, like the amphitheater, like other venues in town that are privately run. And it's not going to be hard to see that it's going to be taking away business from those facilities. The convention center itself, I know of a Ducks Unlimited banquet that used to go elsewhere. They went to the convention center. They used to have middle of the island cater it. They weren't allowed. They had to have government chicken, and it wasn't so good.
Since we brought up the convention center, the 2011 CAFR indicates about a $13 million expenditure of funds for the last 2 years. Now, the latest information won't be gathered until June 29th. Actually, it should be gathered right now, but won't be compiled. But if you look at the 45,658 people that attended in 2010, and then look at the 65,476 that came in in 2011, and you look at the number of events, et cetera, and you take a look at the losses, each event, of which there was 111, spent $13,000 in the convention center. The first year, the revenue was $958,000. Even if you double it, it doesn't come anywhere near profitability. And Mr. O'Grady has said it was never designed for that. So it was designed for not to be profitable, okay. But the economic development side of this just hasn't set through. There was 3,007 rooms rented in 2010 with 45,000 people. With 65,000 people, there was 3,778. So those 65,000 people must have been real friendly for a long period of time, because a lot of them were bunking together. Or they were locals.
Thank
and that's
you.
Probably what it was.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to our next questioner so we can get as many as possible in.
Scott, why are Americans for Prosperity?
Who you are?
My name is Andrew Gray. Why are Americans for Prosperity an out-of-town group funding your campaign?
Actually, it's a local group, Americans for Prosperity. We have the biggest chapter just about in the United States. We are grassroots as it gets. We've had, I can't tell you how many people on the streets putting out signs. The reason for Americans Prosperity helped us is because they agree with the principles that we are standing on, and that's that it's not right for the government to take hardworking people's tax money and give it to... Mr. O'Grady mentioned the money going to Mandalay, me saying that, and that's what I said, because the gross amount of the money that's been taken out of our pockets... There's one beneficiary. The main beneficiary of this tax money is Mandalay and the Braves. That's undeniable. With the preponderance of economic assessments we've seen, all the analysts point to the same thing. that this doesn't bring jobs to town. You're not going to benefit from this. You're going to be taxed for this. The only beneficiaries of this are Mandalay and the Braves. Americans for Our Prosperity funded our cause. They gave us money because we didn't have $50,000 from the Braves and $50,000 from Schoeninger and $50,000 from whoever to hire a media firm out of Raleigh to organize and pay for our campaign. Why are the Braves paying for it? Why are these other groups spending money on it? Because it's their cause.
Thank you. Next questioner.
My name is Steve Baroni. I live downtown. I have two concerns and then a couple of quick questions mostly for Councilman O'Grady and Mayor Saffo. Most of the concerns first are almost all of the markets that you guys talked about in terms of successful minor league ballparks and franchises are way bigger than Wilmington, North Carolina, and have a much bigger population base to draw on than we do here. And the other part of that is the job situation. Neither of you have spoken to the fact that Scott and Jim brought up that only 100 or so jobs are going to be created by this if it does fly, and none of them are good jobs. Most of them are maintenance and sanitary type.
Would you ask your question, please?
The question I have, I'd like you to address those two concerns. The question is, if the referendum goes down on Election Day as expected, how ready is the city to embrace the Cal Ripken baseball privately funded plan for a team and stadium that would be out near the airport? And if you could please explain that particular option, which I don't think people are aware of.
I don't know of any Ripken proposal. I have not seen a Ripken proposal. I heard there's a group out there talking about one, but I also understand that Mandalay has this particular area that you cannot negotiate in this particular area without getting permission from minor league baseball. So I have not heard anything from the Ripken group personally coming in here and has said anything to me in respect to that, Steve. And in respect to the jobs, there's about 139 permanent jobs, 645 construction jobs. And going back to your question in respect to looking at other markets in the state of North Carolina that kind of mirrors us, I will tell you that Asheville has a team that does very well. Asheville has a little bit of a smaller population than we do. You also have a team in Hickory that does very well. And you also have a team in Zebulon, which is about 20 miles outside of Raleigh, that does also very well. So most of the minor league teams that we have looked at in the state of North Carolina do very well. And this is a growing market. The 350,000 people in the MSA here between Brunswick, New Hanover, and Pender County. We have one of the fastest growing counties in the entire state in Brunswick, right across the river. And I would say that's a bedroom community of downtown Wilmington. And there's going to be a lot of people from over there that we know that will come over here and support this. And so, as Kevin alluded to, and the other concern that a lot of citizens have shared with us, is what happens if they sell 30 tickets a game or 300, like we saw in some of the past teams that were here, like the Roosters or the Waves. And that's a legitimate question that the citizens had to have an answer to. That's why we decided to go with a guarantee of $500,000 a year, whether they sold 10,000 tickets or they sold no tickets, to protect the taxpayers in making certain that we paid this debt.
Were those smaller markets, Mr. Mayor, were those stadiums publicly funded or privately funded?
Most of them were publicly funded, or public-private partnership. The only stadium that I'm aware of here in the state that was 100% privately funded was the team in Greensboro. And by the way,
that was done by a foundation.
And that was done by a foundation. And by the way, on that particular stadium, the team ended up buying the stadium. They were doing so well in Greensboro.
Thank you. Cleve, how many more audience questions do we have? Are we getting close? Okay. Okay, we might go over a little bit just to accommodate all of the audience questions, because that's really the purpose of tonight's event. Who is our next questioner?
Thank you. My name is Jim Turner, and I stand before you with about over 55 years in business, and I'm perplexed to understand how you can claim that a $54 million debt to property owners with a $10 million return is a very good business deal.
That's the question? Okay, it's not a $10 million return, Jim. $10 million is being paid by baseball, which would be used to reduce the debt. But the return will be on the jobs and the direct spending that will occur as a result of this. And we've had our study done, and our economists tell us the direct spending that we can expect over the 20 years is $168 million. Now, I forget multipliers, because I don't like multipliers, because that's after the money goes out and it goes from you to you and you start counting that up. I'd rather look at the direct spending. $168 million over 20 years, that's $8 million a year. Our debt that the taxpayers will pay is $44 million over 20 years, a little over $2 million. So basically, we're going to pay out $2 million a year, $2.2 million, in order to get in $8 million. $2 million, I'll give you $2 million, you give me $8 million. I'll take that deal. That is a terrific return on investment. Now, if you don't like the $168 million, if you think it's overstated, that's fine. Cut it in half. I'll take $4 million. For a $2.2 million investment. We've got a positive return predicted by the study done, accepted methodology, and it doesn't even include the potential impact on property value. Because I don't know about, excuse me, there's no follow-up question. I don't know about you. I know my property value went down. I'd like to see it go back up. The economic studies on the impact of stadiums on property value indicate that when you build a stadium downtown in a redevelopment area, you can expect hundreds of millions of dollars of increased property value. I would like to see that. I would like to see all of our houses become more valuable. A baseball stadium helps. You know what else a baseball stadium does? The other return? It gets us to be one of the best places. I'm not done. I'm answering your question, sir. Gets us to be one of the best places to bring a business in this country.
Thank you.
Bloomberg Business Week just rated 5 North Carolina cities as the best places to live for business people. And you know what? They've all got baseball stadiums. And
thank
we're
you
not
much.
On the list. We need to
thank
be there.
Thank God.
Thank you. Gentlemen, do you have a rebuttal?
Yeah, I'd like to say a little something. I'll refer back. He mentioned his economists. And the National Sports Services, I don't think, qualifies as an academic firm. Most of the economists refer to them as cheerleaders because they're a consulting firm. They're going to tell you what you want to hear. I don't remember the question, but I loved it when one of them said, "I'm sorry, sir, that wasn't within our study," when they were asked a question. But again, what the economists say is more jobs, economic development sounds great. The only problem is it's not true. Go do the research for yourself, people. Don't listen to me. I'm not an economist. Go look it up. Go look up stadium economist, and you're going to see page after page after page after page. They all say the same thing. It doesn't work. It's not true.
Thank you. Next questioner, please state your name and ask your question.
Hello. My name is Paige Freeman, and I would like to ask either side to estimate or address the additional costs of the stadium not mentioned in the present proposed cost, such as parking, roads, necessary infrastructure, environmental cleanup costs, possible renovations, and cost overruns. I feel that there are many costs that have not been considered or added in, and I was wondering if someone could estimate or address these many unmentioned costs. Thank you.
Your question is for both sides?
In
that case, why don't we start with you, Mr. Harris?
If we look at the convention center as any indicator, it was projected at $51 million and came in at $63, a 19% cost overrun. The environmental cleanup for that site was about $1 million. I got that from the company who pumped the water out from underneath it. PPD continues to dewater their site, which is the ethical and proper thing to do. So the cost isn't going to be a one-time cost. It's going to be just environmental cleanup is going to be an ongoing cost. It's going to have to be dewatered on a regular basis. Certainly the city's aware that there's going to be more police protection and that sort of thing that's going to have to occur with that many people in an empty part of town right now. Roads and infrastructure, I'm sure, are covered in some part of their $31 million. I know the $6 million is supposed to cover the land and environmental issues. But only they will be able to answer if those are covered, because we don't have all the details.
Scott, let me just clarify something. The $31 million may not be used for anything else but the stadium, unless the management agreement suddenly changes and things come out. But it's all to the stadium.
And they do. Go ahead.
Mayor Saffo, Councilman O'Grady, do you have a response to the question?
That was kind of rambling, so it's hard to respond to. But we have everything calculated in to the expense. There are no additional operating expenses because baseball takes all the operating expenses, so we have none there. As to the additional services, we have figured that into the budget, and it fits into the 2.5-cent budget. As to capital improvements, we have provided for a capital improvement fund, which is very ample and will satisfy all future capital improvement needs. So essentially, everything that you've questioned and you've asked about, Paige, we've considered that, and the 2.5 cents is more than ample to cover all of it. So we don't anticipate any additional. Now, what happens if steel suddenly spikes and we can't build it for the $31 million? We have an escape clause in our contract that if we cannot get a contractor at risk who will build it for $31 million, we can walk away from this. So we've already provided for those things. We've protected ourselves in every way we can from those kinds of additional expenses. And most of all, we protected ourselves against operational losses so that if it doesn't matter how many tickets they sell, they've got to pay us the same rent.
Thank you, Councilman O'Grady.
Rachel, could he address the environmental cleanup, police coverage?
Yeah.
And tell me what section escape clause is.
Environmental cleanup is clearly provided for in $6 million. We've already got our estimates, and there is ample money. Based on our experience at the convention center site, we have more than ample money, we believe, to cover it. Now, if we were, in fact, I think our next meeting, the first option contracts coming to us. The option, by the way, is going to cost us $1 to hold the land out so nobody buys it away from us while we wait for your vote. We have provided them there for an environmental examination period. And if during that it exceeds so that we cannot meet the budget, we will be able to walk away from that. And then
that's good.
We will not be able to acquire the land, and then it would fall through.
That's good.
We have protected ourselves on every one of those.
Where's that escape clause?
It's in here. It's one of the contingencies, is our ability to purchase the land.
Let's move on to the next question. If you're just joining us, you're tuned to a special live broadcast of WHQR's and WWAY's Baseball Forum. We are running a little bit over tonight, but we'd like to get to all the audience questions that are reasonable. Sir, please state your name and ask your question.
Okay, Ben McCoy. And my question is to Mr. O'Grady. In your very opening statement, first statement tonight, you were explaining how wonderful this whole thing is going to be if and when it passes. But you used an interesting word when you got to the part about voters deciding on this. You called that a downside. It's on tape, and, you know, I invite anyone to check that out. But I would like for you to explain to all the people you're asking to vote in favor of this why their voice on how to spend their own money is a downside, in your opinion. Thank you.
No. Well, I think you misunderstood what I was saying. Clearly, on other forms of financing, there is no need to go out to the public. When you do a GO bond, you do have to do it. It is an extra effort, and it's an extra expense. We're happy to do it because it does bring us the best rates. And in this one, on our perception that there was obviously a division in this community, we weren't going to do it any other way. We didn't have to go to this vote. There was nothing stopping us from going with other financing methods. We chose to go with a GO bond so that you all would get to vote on it.
Thank you. Do you have a response to that?
Just that Laura Padgett was the only council member, and this was in February, the only one to ever say in any record we can find, and we've got 2 feet thick of documents back here we brought with us, to ever say it should be a referendum. We've never found
it. Sitting back there saying she said it.
Yeah, Margaret.
There was many people that said it, and nobody ever
took that off the table.
But that was.
And I know that you folks
like
to play that up a lot, that we were going to force this down people's throats, but we were never going to force anything down anybody's throats.
Perhaps it's the timing.
It's unfortunate that some of that stuff was being said out there, and it's unfortunate because we were never, we never had an intention to do it that way.
Okay, well, that's okay. Good. And that was the whole point of that.
At the end of the day, it's the people's decision. Okay. It's a democratic process.
Well, I don't think that was the purpose of the petition, but let's not get into that.
Okay.
No, but our, back in, I'm sorry.
Our next, let's move on to our next question. Sir, please state your name and ask your question.
My name is Mark Lashley. My question is directed to Mr. O'Grady. Mr. O'Grady, I'm going to take you back in time a little bit to 2011. This was your exact statement. This project can't work if there's no private money. It may attract business, but it can't be done just with tax money. It's got to be done with private participation. These comments were made in reference to a natatorium that was voter approved in 2006. At the time, the city didn't have an agreement to have any support from New Hanover County to help fund this. They had no support from New Hanover County Schools, and they did not have a collateral participation agreement with UNCW. What has changed in the last year that makes you say it is okay now that the city should go it alone on a project that's going to cost more than twice as much?
I can tell you what the difference is. Hear this? That's opportunity, and it's knocking at our door. Let me tell you. The natatorium project had no future because the public that was going to step up and help pay for it never stepped up. In the case of baseball, we talked to baseball for a long time. Rich Newman was here a lot, and he's a nice guy. We liked talking to him. He's a good operator, but he didn't have a team. But let's face it, 1 year ago, they came to us with the best team you could have. They brought us the Atlanta Braves. They, not only that, but it coincided with the ability to acquire a franchise, and there's only 162 of them out there, and in this area, there's only two leagues that are possible. Your chances of getting a team, very rare. They came to us both with the ability to get a team, have it connected to the best franchise in baseball, and with a great operator. And one other thing, there's still land available on the river to build it. If we let that opportunity go past us, any one of those things may never come back. If buildings get built on that riverfront in the future, you will never fit a baseball field out there. We have a convergence of points right now that gives us this opportunity. And I know it's a tough economic time, but when that you hear that knock at the door, you better answer it. And we've answered it. We've studied it. We've brought you the best deal we could. We've protected you the best we can. And we've gotten the most money out of baseball that anybody at A-level ever has gotten. We've brought you a good deal, but now it's up to you. We can only bring you to the deal. You've got to pick it up and say, yes, we want to do it.
Rachel? Thank you very much. Yes, please.
In the beginning of baseball in Wilmington, there were numerous private investors willing to step up. Sounds kind of like the natatorium. Over time, they dropped out here and there. The reason they dropped out is because these are business people, and they look at the numbers, and they say it's not going to work. Recently, the Trask offered 10 acres of land and ample parking, showed the city how they could, they were going to give it to the city for free. They showed the city how they could cover 80% of their costs with this other project. Wouldn't talk. We've had the Camerons offer land, not considered. Does anybody really believe that any other location was ever considered? But in the end, with the taxpayers bearing this burden, you've got to think of the people that I met at Ward 29 with the mayor and the councilman. These people said, we can't afford it. We can't afford to send our kids there. We can't afford to pay for it. And the mayor said, if you can't afford it, just vote no. Well, I can't afford it.
May I say something in respect to the Trask issue? Please. That Scott alluded to? Rayford did have a piece of property over there across the street from Mayfair. And there was a concern in respect to the neighborhoods in that particular area, especially with Lucia Point and with landfall in that particular area, as well as the traffic congestion. But more importantly, the bigger issue was the amount of parking that was going to be required to be paved over there.
the concerns that a lot of people have with stormwater, especially in those creeks and those environmentally sensitive particular areas. There was no perspective from Rayford to say we're going to pay for this. It's just pretty much donate the land. You still have to pay for this facility, and there's been a lot of discussion of people out there saying that we can get this thing privately built. But it's interesting that what they say, privately built, but they never say how they're going to pay for it. We're bringing a proposal where we're showing you how you're going to pay for it. Yes, it does come with a cost. Yes, it's about, on an average home, about $4 a month. Yes, it's about $1 a week. If you can't afford it, I respect that. Don't vote for it. If you can't afford it, if you like to see baseball, if you like to see this amenity and this investment in the community, vote for it. I have but one vote. You have one vote. It's a democratic process. And I will also say one other thing. This community over many years has asked the citizens of this community over a lot of different things. Parks bonds, transportation bonds, hospital bonds, sewer bonds, community college bonds. And it's just, you know, people ask that. The elected officials that represent those different bodies ask that. Never before have I seen a group of elected officials vilified in the community because we're just bringing this up for a discussion to ask you to make a decision in a democratic process. This is the greatest form of democracy. This is America. You will make the decision. We will respect that decision if it's for or against. But at least we're bringing that decision to you. We're not making that decision. We negotiated a deal with what we believe to be one of the best baseball organizations in major leagues, as well as one of the best management companies in the minor leagues. And they have done, and we have thoroughly investigated it and done our due diligence to it. So it's up to you, the citizens, to make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think Kevin Wizardo has a follow-up question.
Mayor, just based on what you just said, a question a lot of people have asked us in the media. If the bond fails, is baseball in Wilmington dead then?
I believe so. I believe that we're the only ones here at the table, and I believe that it would be.
So there's no other way the city would approach trying to build this stadium?
Well, I think that we've asked, we've looked at it, we've talked with different entities, different public entities besides us. And from what I've gathered and what I've heard in the public debate in respect to the county commissioners, I don't see any hope there. So I think at the end of the day, the vote will be fine.
Kevin, I'd like to add to that. We have clearly never discussed this among the seven of us on the city council. We've not considered what happens if there's a no vote. But my personal sense is there will be no votes to do any other thing because this is it. We brought a great opportunity here, and if the people in this city say they don't want it, we're not going to force it on them. That's why we went with the GO bond and put it to a vote, even though we didn't have to.
Mr. Rafferty or Mr. Harry, did you have anything to add to that? Otherwise, we'll move on to...
I'm not even sure how to add to that. So
okay,
no.
Well, let's move on to closing statements then. We offered a coin toss to the participants earlier to determine who would finish with closing statements, and Mr. Rafferty and Mr. Harry gave the city the choice. They've chosen to end, so we'll give you time for your closing statement. You can use your 2 minutes any way you'd like, but this will be a hard time.
Our city's at a crossroads. We can choose the boring but responsible path of governing, efficiently building and maintaining infrastructure, police, fire, water, sewer, roads, or we can waste our time and treasury gambling on risky schemes. By gambling, we attempt to force growth by raising taxes and spending it on the typical, unimaginative products that supposedly bring economic development. These valuable additions, like convention centers, baseball stadiums, city marinas, or cruise line terminals, make grand claims, but they never come true. We believe that it is not economic development to put taxpayers' money at risk. True economic development is a net gain in money flow into a community from outside. This is done by creating an environment that private investors see as appealing and therefore put their own money at risk, not local tax dollars. I think it's ironic that the people who suggest these schemes have been hailed as visionary leaders. Vision is not copy and paste. If you're going to try the tactics that have already been tried in hundreds of other cities, it would seem logical to look at those cities and case studies for success or failure. But when you hire a consultant and ask them, will it work here, without doing your own homework, you invite failure. Consultants look at the best case examples in hopes of copying that success and pasting it in Wilmington. Worse, when you let the company that's in line to be paid for such a position handpick your consultant, you just let the fox guard the hen house. It's a clear conflict of interest. If you take the time to investigate baseball stadiums' success rate, you'll see that it's a lost cause. There's not a legitimate academic study that shows a positive return on investment for stadiums as an industry. Sure, there's success here or there, but they're the exception, not the rule. I have a stack of studies here, all of them saying the same thing. The jobs and revenue created at a stadium are less than those drained from the community in which it's located. The local established businesses in Wilmington will lose more business than the stadium brings. It's that simple. But don't believe me. Read it for yourself. I provided a handout to the media. They'll surely post it, listing numerous, unanimous scientific studies, all with the same conclusion. Vote no, stadium tax.
Thank you very much. Mayor Sappho, Councilman O'Grady, 2 minutes.
This is an opportunity, folks. And we are putting this in your hands. It is $4 a month. It's a dollar a week. If you want a nice, great facility that will be used for generations to come, please vote for it. If you don't and you can't afford $4 a month, then don't vote for it. The economic development that we have seen from our investigation and going around and thoroughly looking at baseball stadiums and investing some money in really looking at this baseball issue once and for all in our community is thorough, it's been good, and it's been long. This has been more than a year that we've been talking about baseball and discussing the aspects, the pros as well as the cons of baseball. Baseball can work in this community. We have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to build a first-class multi-use facility on the Cape Fear River in historic downtown Wilmington with a beautiful riverfront. Just imagine what we can do. Dream big, folks. Thank you. Mr. O'Grady?
I really can't add much to that.
You have 45 seconds left.
We've done our best to protect you. All we need you to do is say yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor and Councilman O'Grady.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And
Rachel, Sarah, Kevin, thank you.
I'd like to thank our panelists, Mayor Sappho, Councilman O'Grady, Scott Harry, and Jim Rafferty. I'd also like to thank our journalists, WWAY's Kevin Wizzardo and WHQR's Sarah Wood. Thanks to Hank Blant and our master timekeeper, whose services we didn't really use tonight. And Cleve Callison, our question screener. For WHQR, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. And many thanks to Scott Pickey and all the folks at WWAY who collaborated with us on this forum. This event will be rebroadcast on WWAY's main channel Saturday at noon. But most importantly, thanks to you, our audience, and the people who make up this extraordinary community. Thank you for your thoughtful questions and your participation in this event tonight. Remember to vote on November 6th. Thank you and good night. Thank you.